Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 55th episode of the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher. Today, we are going to talk about offshore coding, billing, healthcare, and just things that we outsource, and is it a good idea? So I want to talk to you about the pros and cons. But first, we'd like to thank Healthcare Executive. Healthcare Executives Network is the fastest growing community for healthcare executives and their trusted partners, healthcareexecutivesnetwork.org. And Keck Medicine of USC, over 500 nationally renowned physicians at a leading academic medical center, keeping you healthy, on track, and doing the things you love. KeckMedicine.org. Okay, so we want to really kind of tackle this conversation, and I just want to have a conversation with you about it, because giving you the pros and cons, I know I need to not probably give you my opinion, even though I have very strong opinions about outsourcing, especially outside the country. And so outsourcing means that you're basically going to have somebody else, when your company designates another company to undertake any part of your business venture. But offshoring is a little bit different. So offshoring means that you're outsourcing to an organization that is located in a different country. So outsourcing can be, or I should say offshoring, can be desirable to many companies, mainly because of cost and cost savings. So when you look at subbing things out, and you know, I know it's really outsourcing, but when you just send them out of country, you're looking at some things that you really have to be cautious about. And so I just wanted to really have a conversation with you about this so that we can really kind of gather insight and understand, is this good for your organization? In healthcare, you have a different animal than if you're outsourcing retail or outsourcing sales or trying to do your call center. Healthcare is different because we have privacy rules, HIPAA. We have PHI, protected health information, and we also have to be careful, because in that health information and that patient information also comes with identity information, such as social security numbers and addresses and contact information for that patient. So if we are going to outsource, how protected is that if that company is not a US-based owned company? So there are definitely some things that we want to have a conversation about and just really take a look at what is that we want when we're outsourcing and offshoring some of our healthcare tasks and jobs. So here's what I found, really looking at the reality of working with an overseas company. And I want to identify just some issues. I think I've come up with 10 to consider when working with an overseas company. So the first thing is pretty obvious, and that would be HIPAA. So one of the top issues of concern for healthcare organizations when considering whether to outsource a service or services to a foreign operation is the protection of health information. And that's that personal health information, that PHI. It is imperative that you make sure a HIPAA risk assessment of the operation is completed and proper security measures are in place to protect PHI. I would ask the operations risk assessment plan for the risk assessment plan and a description of its security measures. So security measures should include items such as utilization of what we call dumb terminals. Those are terminals without hard drive for storage. Lockers for employees to store cell phones and other devices capable of taking pictures, security cameras and limited printers in locked offices to help prevent the printing of information that contains PHI, and where is the US-based owned entity part of this company? Because remember, once it leaves the country, we don't have control over what outside countries do. And I just wanted to mention the two most popular countries, or I should say the most used countries that outsourcing and offshoring happens with, would be India and Philippines. So those countries basically have the most cost-effective, or I should say the lowest cost threshold when it comes to work involved and the expense to a US-based physician's practice and hospital. And so that can be very attractive to those two countries. But the other thing you have to look at is that many of my clients have experienced a great deal of frustration when trying to interface with a knowledgeable client representative here in the U.S. or abroad. And I've worked with so many overseas countries, but the lack of responsiveness, client service, and the inability to get the right people can definitely be frustrating. So you want to work to address this with your overseas partner prior to it even becoming an issue. So you want to include contractual language that identifies your service person, the process that's in place in the event that this person leaves the organization, and really your expectation for levels of service. This should be laid out so that you know what you're getting. A common strategy used by overseas companies is to then outsource their work to other companies, which, you know, makes sense. Sometimes their workload is so big that can sometimes become more than they even expected. And they can get more affordable and capable labor, or other labor can be found at smaller companies. So sometimes relationships between these larger out-of-country companies and smaller companies are forged for the sake of their benefit. But you want to make sure you've got contractual language that states you'll be notified before any of your workload is parceled out. So an annual audit of overseas operation during the year may help to uncover any undisclosed outsourcing of your work. Now, here's a big one, and I hope this is not offensive to anybody. It's not meant to be, but it is what it is. So we really have to talk about it, and that's language and culture. So I frequently hear about the frustration experienced when trying to understand somebody from another country. Although people from various countries speak English, their command of the English language and accent can vary. So patience is a virtue that is important for a successful relationship to evolve. But this is true of all relationships, including those you work with to establish with individuals from parts of your own community, state, and, you know, countries. But as time passes, you also will likely acclimate to the accents of those people you're talking to overseas and who you're communicating with. But if they have to talk to your patients, be aware there will be a level of frustration because our work and your service is in the U.S. So they expect somebody who speaks a good enough English that they can understand what they're saying. So it's worthwhile to take the time to understand another person's culture. And because there are very capable people within all organizations, and everybody's hopefully has the same desire to achieve goals and objectives that you both establish. But clients sometimes do tell me they get frustrated because sometimes, and you want to hear this part, sometimes individuals from one particular country always give an affirmative response when asked about a function, if it can be performed. They always say, oh, yes, yes, yes. And it's like that representative is not all of the time trying to deceive a client, but rather it's part of their culture to always want to please a client and do what's right for the client. So you need to follow up if you're getting that yes answer all the time and find out through further discussion if they're really capable of performing that task in the manner that you require, and it's not just an affirmative answer. So that's really important. Turnover. So this is one thing that's really important to recognize in some of the offshore companies I've seen and I've worked with. The turnover of staff is a constant issue faced by most companies, including overseas operations. So people move for better compensation, a better position, location, improved hours, etc. And you know, you're going to see that in overseas companies as well. But they usually have 30 to 50% turnover rate. And so to ensure the team members you work with are trained, there is appropriate supervisory staff in place and the company uses audit to process and measure and monitor staff performances. You want to ask, you know, who are the refreshers? Who are the, what we call freshmen in their training period of their job? And how are you taking, how is this company basically dealing with turnover? And then there are some key performance indicators, and I like to call them KPIs. So make sure there is a clear understanding of performance expectations, as you would with any outsourced company, not just international, and any internal operations performance information. So overseas operations, you should have daily, weekly, and monthly and quarterly reports. So these reports should reflect performance, productivity, and operational assessments, and they should be very specific. Make sure you're both agreeing upon what you want, and they should include measuring productivity, efficiency, and outcomes. Now, one of the things that's going to be hard to do, and that's policies and procedures, but you want to make sure that if you are going to outsource and offshore, that the policies and procedures can be enforced. And that's why I said it's really important to see if you don't want to leave anything by chance. So you want to make sure that you have policies identified, that you have hopefully a U.S.-based satellite or shell company that basically is the kind of the core, and then they outsource if that's seriously what you want to do. And then location, you know, there's also variables to weigh when considering outsourcing to overseas. Here's one thing to keep in mind. So when outsourcing to overseas operation, access to electricity is a very real concern. So ensure that there are backup generators available and they are tested regularly. Depending on the country and even the part of the country, electricity can be a major issue. So as overseas operation continues to grow, and this isn't going away, companies will sometimes expand or move operations to secondary cities where there is a cheaper workforce and even lower overhead. And also make sure you know if you're getting the benefit of that. When this occurs, access to internet and phone lines may be compromised, as might access to reliable power sources. And so ensure that your contract indicates the location of the office's physical location and notification of any relocation of any workforce. Again, annual audits, you need to make sure that's being done so that you understand what's happening. And then when reviewing contractual language, you know, make sure that there are policies in place for these audits accompanied with a strong compliance plan. I prefer a hybrid approach where select functions are performed overseas, if you're going to do it at all, while others are performed here in the United States. So, you know, you just have to have oversight. And I also believe the expense of having an independent healthcare attorney or certified auditor in the U.S. to oversee the compliance program is a worthwhile investment, because you're really looking at some hidden costs here, and especially if there are errors. And speaking of costs, so yes, the costs associated with outsourcing can be very appealing. So for example, a charge entry person overseas may cost approximately $10,000 annually, while the same person working in the U.S. may be over $40,000, and that doesn't even include their benefits and the cost of management oversight, etc. While the savings of outsourcing can be substantial, there are hidden costs that are often overlooked. So still, those hidden costs, you still have management of the operations. You'll need people who will oversee all the functions performed abroad. And this cost many organizations do not take into account, and they really have to be careful with that, because it can represent a great opportunity for certain members of your team and current workforce to develop their auditing, management, and leadership skills. But you want to make sure that you understand what you're getting, which brings me to perception. And this is the one that's one of the bigger ones as well. Outsourcing is not going away. Now, offshoring is getting more and more popular, which concerns me, because there is a negative perception that comes associated with it. Some is justified, some not so much, but some is justified. There is logic behind the performance of functions that does not compromise quality by a more affordable solution, but it's up to you to decide which functions you feel comfortable outsourcing. So for healthcare, in my opinion, I personally support the coding be performed here in the United States, and that work needs to be with largely a contingency of U.S.-based coders, and strive to find capable American jobs at various institutions. The ability to complement and augment staff, such a staff when is necessary, can be a tremendous advantage. Remember, the CPT book does not come in different languages. It comes in English, and it is not in a different language. And I get these interesting Twitter questions quite often, where on social media, where somebody will ask me and it's clear they don't understand the specialty. Or I'll get an email from somebody who's listened to the CodeCast saying, I heard your CodeCast and I have a question. I need to code a heart cath, and this is what I came up with. And they're working from an offshore company. And it's scary to me. I mean, I'm looking at that, and I'm not saying that there aren't some US-based companies that have people who are calling themselves coders that aren't up to the task, but I'm saying that you have a little bit more of a challenge because, again, a lot of the offshore companies are saying they can handle it and they can't always handle it. So while the savings of outsourcing can be substantial, some of these hidden, these hidden costs are really becoming an issue. Because over the years, you know, even though I've developed some strong relationships with a couple of overseas companies, I've gained the ability, you know, and some comfort to working with an overseas team. In any relationship, that chemistry and that understanding of what you're dealing with in the workforce is really important. Now, as we are in a global economy, there's things that we can learn from other industries that utilize overseas operations. But you have to understand what their skill set is. And in healthcare, you've got to be absolutely 100% positive that this is something that is going to, the effect of this outsourcing is not going to be negative for your company, and that you are going to, you know, not lose control of your business processes, that you understand any problems related to quality and turnaround time. And then you want to look at, are there any shortcomings in performance? Meaning, what did you expect versus what did you get? And then issues pertaining again to lingual accent variation. And then you also have to be careful with your patients. You know, what do they think? You don't want an irate customer base coupled with certain, you know, enraged employee unions. That would not be good. But you want to really understand if this is something that can really reduce cash outflow and optimize your resource utilization. Just because you're lowering labor costs doesn't mean you're lowering your out-of-pocket costs completely, because you actually could have some more hidden costs because of the issues that there could be a possibility that your process isn't being streamlined, where you don't have, you know, the effective work force that you thought you did. And there's not a lot of talent out there when it comes to offshoring. So I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying you have to be cognizant of what actually is appropriate. And one of the biggest disadvantages, seriously, is losing sensitive data and the loss of confidentiality. So make sure there are checks in place for that. And we talked about HIPAA. You also want to make sure that, since outsourcing with a provider that may work with other customers, they may not give 100% of time and attention to your company, obviously. That happens, you know, in the U.S. as well, obviously, if you're working with a billing service. But this could result in delays and inaccuracy. The other thing you want to keep in mind, too, is how about the time element? I mean, where is this offshore company? Are they... somewhere where, you know, you're looking at a 9-hour time difference. I mentioned India, for example. They are 9 hours and 34 minutes, 30 minutes ahead of, I say 34 because it always seems like there's a variance, ahead of Washington, D.C., so ahead of East Coast time. So that's an issue. Do they provide, and this is for any company actually, does any outsourced or offshore company provide a Saturday or weekend call, you know, as far as you being able to get a hold of them? And are they available for late night calls? Can they work with the time zone that you're in? But the biggest thing is privacy. Are you getting what you paid for? And do they understand how to code for your specialty? And so all I can say is if you know, you're really concerned about it or not thinking that it's a good idea, I would just really take a step back. Make sure you find everything you can find when it comes to really thinking if this is a good idea for your company, and if there is more disadvantages than advantages. So, you know, when you're looking at this of, for example, do you know if they're in financial hardship and, you know, a risk of bankruptcy or anything like that? You can't control that. And quality problems is the big issue too. So are they inexperienced when, you know, they're working on some information and that outsourcing relationship? Do you understand that? So communication is going to be, you know, really a key here to understand what's going on. And then hidden costs and any legal problems could arise if certain terms and conditions are not met or clearly defined. So I just wanted to give you a heads up, really just kind of have a conversation with you about that. I get this question asked all the time, so I just thought it was important to actually have the conversation. I know it's not one of the most positive ones we've done in a long time, but I just felt it was something that was really necessary, because it's all the time. It's something that we deal with all the time, cross cultures, offshoring, outsourcing, and it's not going away. And so it was important to actually bring it to your attention. Okay. So I want to get to my coding question for the day. And actually it is on poisoning code, and it's not what you think as far as an intentional poisoning, but we had an error in drug prescription, and it can be made by a patient, a nurse, a caregiver, or a provider. So here was the question that came in. It says, we had a patient who presented to the ER with tachycardia due to caregiver accidentally administering several extra doses of the patient's Atenol. So how do we code for that? Because we were a little bit concerned. So the first thing is that's actually called a poisoning. So it's an injury to a patient. So you're going to have a T44.7X1A, because A is going to be the initial encounter. And then you would have the R00.0 code for tachycardia unspecified. So the first one would be what the encounter's for. And then the second one would be for basically what manifested from that encounter. So always want to make sure we're understanding what's going on with that. Now, here's one that also came up, and with the same kind of theme here. Overdose of a drug intentional, taken or administered and resulting in toxicity, is a poisoning as well. So here's one. So we said, it says here, we had a patient intentionally took amitriptyline in an attempt for suicide, which causes seizures, grand mal seizures. Amitriptyline is the brand name for amitriptyline, which is the term we need to look up for your code. The patient is seeing a neurologist in follow-up from the ER. So how would you code that? Well, the first one would be T43.012A, poisoning by the tetracyclic antidepressant. It says, and then it's intentional self-harm active treatment. So that's the A. And then you have your grand mal seizure, not otherwise specified, which is your G40.409. So we have a code for both of that. We're going to have two codes when it comes to poisoning. One for the actual intentional or unintentional attempt, and then one for what resulted from that attempt. Okay, so you always want to keep those things in mind. So my personal insight this week, I always get trying to get you to know a little bit more about me now that we're over 25,000 listeners, and now we are actually an award-winning podcast. We won a couple of awards here lately. And so a couple of personal tidbits that I wanted to share with you. So somebody was talking about the other day, so what's your go-to snack? So you just have to have something. What are you dealing with go-to snack, and what would you have? So for me, I hate to say it, but it would be dark Reese's peanut butter cups. So if anybody wants to get on my good side, that would be it. And one other thing, and actually this is kind of a funny thing. So somebody asked me the other day, they said, is there something that you just think is a quirky thing that somebody may or may not know about you? So I'm like, I don't know. So I asked my husband, I said, is there something about me that you think is just strange and that you've known now since we've been married almost 20 years? He goes, how about your obsession with Lip Smacker? I'm like, excuse me? So apparently, and I never really thought about this before, one thing that I always have in my pocket is Lip Smacker, not what you think of, you know, chapstick, Lip Smacker, you know, the ones that your kids use, like Dr. Pepper and Cherry Cola and Sprite. There's always one in my pocket. I do not like dry lips, and so I always have a Lip Smacker in there, and I've had it in my pocket, at least a new one or something, since I can remember. And so it actually is kind of a joke in my family. I get them in my Christmas stocking, and I've had a couple of clients who became friends of mine. And one gal, Bindi, she sent me a large Dr. Pepper Lip Smacker. I can't find them anymore, so I was bummed. I really liked that one, but that's a quirky thing for me. So just little things, you know, I'll keep trying to find them. Hopefully you find them kind of interesting or funny or humorous, or just find them plain silly. So anyway, hope everybody goes out and makes it a great week and a great weekend. And thanks again for listening to the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.